you found the best place for quality internet talk. Around the clock and around the world. TalkZone.com. Welcome to Talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G on TalkZone.com. And now, here's a Cubs fan who drinks light beer and has mustard relish and grilled onions on his Chicago dog. And a White Sox fan who prefers single malts and Cuban cigars. But there's no mistaking their everlasting love for the Fighting Illini of the University of Illinois. You are Talking Illini with Boz and Mr. G.
Boz, how old is that Illinois golf shirt? Can we get the camera on Boz for a second? Does that date back to what, about 1982 or something?
No, I think it's within the last 5 years or so.
You think so?
Why? Because it looks like it's been washed a few times?
I don't know. It looks like a style from another era.
No, this is the same Illinois thing that you see on the field in the end zone, although we didn't see the end zone too much.
Do you think? I think we need new graphics at Assembly Hall, too. I'm not really digging our graphics.
I think we just change it recently.
Yeah, and then the other thing is, I'd like to go with maybe an orange and white checkerboard like Tennessee in the football end zones.
No, I don't want that. I do want to see the field somehow look cleaner. Is it me or
I've never had a cleanliness issue with the field.
It looks dirty. All those pebbles, ground up tires for the.
That's part of the program.
Well, I know, but other fields when you watch on TV, they don't like the white. The white on the lettering and the sidelines. It's always dirty. You don't see that at other ballparks.
There was a movie where this guy is going. The Ponderosa, it looks fake in color. I liked it better in black and white. That's what you sound like, Boz. That somehow the football field shouldn't have the rubber that you need for traction. Maybe you pay more attention to Illinois than you do to other football programs, and when the rubber flies up at Michigan Stadium,
you go there before anyone steps on the field for a game. It's like that.
Bring a vacuum next time.
Well, maybe they don't have the proper one. It didn't come with the field. They got a second, Brand X vacuum or something.
Who's going to be DePaul's new coach? Have you heard any rumors?
I heard they are interested in Rick Majerus. I don't know why, but I heard that is a name that they have seriously discussed. I don't know if they've talked to him yet, but I think you got. Not necessarily a guy that old, but a guy. I think you need a guy with experience. All this, Tracy or Lowry, or I can't see that. I think you need a fairly big name guy. I don't know who you could get or if you could get him, but now I did see Mark Aguirre on an interview show a week or so ago, and I was very impressed. I guess he needs to.
He's been an assistant coach, hasn't he?
In the NBA. Mm-hmm. He needs to get a degree before they would allow him to coach. But from the interview, it sounded like that's going to be part of the plan, and they can only help DePaul, him going into the inner city and plucking whoever he could get out of there.
You know who's a prominent assistant on Calipari's staff?
Rod Strickland.
Yeah.
Yeah, but see, he's not, they can be a head coach, I mean, there's guys that have been head coaches for a long time that, need help.
Well, you could put a staff around a guy like that and perhaps be successful.
In your blog, which is on our website, talkingillini.com, and was sent out to our mailing list, and if you want to get on our mailing list, you could email us at talkingillini@yahoo.com. Kind of towards the end, mentioned something about lessons learned.
Correct.
What lessons do you think the staff has learned this year that represent maybe a difference in philosophy from the past that they'll implement moving forward? Do you have anything in mind?
Well, one is that the players and coaches need to have a sense of urgency in November. And not just think that they can turn it on and off. That those games in November and December were critical to our resume. And because we didn't come with the proper energy level early on in the year, we were penalized for it late. So a sense of urgency is one. Two, we need to be stronger mentally and physically. We need to be more aggressive. We need to press more. We need to get our guys stronger, and we need to dictate tempo in games. And thirdly, the last thing that I hope that we learned, and I'm not sure that Weber can do this, Weber tends to, with under 10 minutes left in the game and him having a 10-point lead, he tends to go into a shell. And I don't think you can do that. I think you've got to play to win and not play, excuse me for the double negative, not to lose.
I want to. Those are very good points, and I want to get back to our offense and our offensive inbounds plays underneath our offensive basket, although maybe I should take the S off of plays because it seems like we only have one. It doesn't work, and we lob it back to center court. But the Ohio State game, very early on, if you recall, Brandon Paul got the ball on the wing and drove baseline hard and got two quick fouls on Diebler, and Diebler was done for the half. And then there was another time or two where DJ took it to the hole. And I'm wondering, again, you know, why haven't we done this all year? I mean, does our motion offense, is it taught so that you're supposed to catch and pass and catch and shoot and dribble drive is the last option?
Remember something else, too. Ohio State did not have a lot of size down low, and Lauderdale may be big, but he's not a great shot blocker.
Well, but, you know, I mean, you could be 20 feet out, dribble drive, and pull up at 10 feet before you even get to the center. My point being is that we've been looking, and we think we've got all this athleticism now, but if all we're doing is passing it around the perimeter and shooting, we're not using our athleticism.
These are questions best served and best answered by our answer man, Brad Sturdy. Welcome, Brad.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. Did you hear what we were saying?
Yeah, talking about dribble penetration and the motion offense.
I think
one of the things that they like to do, and it's a struggle, I think, sometimes for guys like Richardson and Paul, is understanding when they have a lane to drive and when they don't. And you started to see at the end of the year, I think, them start to figure out when the lane was there. Let's say they go to drive, and when there's help already in the post, and a guy standing there, it's not a good time to really take it to the basket. But then when the object is, once you get those guys coming off screens and moving and their help defense gets out of position, that's when you get a lane, make a few passes, and then you've got that lane, and then you can attack. I think you saw that really well back with guys like Luther Head and Darren Williams, who could, you know, beat people off the bounce. But they didn't usually do it the first – they make two or three passes. They come off a screen, they get a guy, you know, where the help's in the wrong spot, and – where their guy's a little bit out of position, and that's when you can really take advantage of it.
Well, and one thing we haven't done is we haven't jump stopped very well and kicked. And I think it's a pretty elementary skill set.
Yeah, our guys jump in the air a lot. I mean, it's something they've harped on with Dimitri for 3 years now, and he got better for a while. And then at the end of the year, if you notice, he went back to it, getting up in the air and then not having anything to do with the ball. You know, jump stop and see survey. One thing, if you look last year, that's one thing Chester developed and got really good at. Now, I realize he wasn't going to finish in the rim a lot of times, but he got good. He'd get in the defense, and then he'd stop in the middle, and he'd kick. And you could see he got a lot of open shots for guys, and that's why he had, you know, six assists a game or whatever.
Actually, Meacham did a better job in the second half of the year of driving the hoop and again, seeing things for other guys.
Yep, I think you're exactly right. And I think one thing that Brandon struggles with more than anybody is that Brandon drives to score. And doesn't realize that when three guys converge, that's the time to, you know, there's somebody open somewhere. And he'll get that. I mean, he's learning. I mean, he was a really raw kid. He didn't play varsity until he was a junior in high school. So you're not talking about a kid who's been playing, you know, at a high level all of his life. So it's been an adjustment.
Almost.
He's got a ton of talent, but he'll get better at it. I think DJ's thing is DJ kind of starts settling for jump shots a little bit more than he had. Even in the preseason, he was more of a – he'd drive in and take that 15-foot pull-up, 12-foot pull-up. And then as he got in the games, he started settling for more three-pointers. Now, he shot them well, you know, for the most part, so that's not a problem. But I think you'll see him advance his game a little more. I think when the games got physical, too, you saw those guys, their ball-handling skills aren't good enough that when they're getting bumped and ridden, that they can make those drives and make those crossovers against the defense. So something they're getting better at, and I think you'll see a lot more of it next year.
Have you been around the team Sunday afternoon or yesterday after the selections and the NIT announcement and all that?
I talked to the coaches a little bit. Talked to a couple of players, but yeah, I mean, I think they're obviously disappointed. I mean, but they also realize. I think the good thing is they realize it's their fault. I mean, you know, and don't get me wrong. I think that I would definitely say that Illinois deserves a bid more than Utah State does, just because they actually played someone. But by the same token, Illinois could have earned themselves a bid numerous times and didn't get it done. So it's on them, and I think the coaches realize that, and they're upset with themselves for not getting it done, and the players are upset with themselves. I think that they have a little bit of a mindset. It'll be interesting to see how they come out, because I thought in the Big Ten tournament that's the best basketball they've played all season. I thought the way they played against Wisconsin and Ohio State was tremendous.
They made
some mistakes, but they were really good, and I think if they come out and play that way in this NIT, I think that bodes really well for next season.
It's my contention that with the exception of the Georgia loss, you probably could have reversed any one of those 14 losses or 13 other losses, and they would be in the tournament today.
Yeah, I think the big one for me is the Utah game, because Utah, if they beat Utah, then they don't play Bradley, and they play Oklahoma State, who even if you lose to is not a bad loss like Bradley, and it's actually their RPI would be much higher just by winning that one game and having a better strength of schedule then, and that would be one more win. I think the committee looked at 19-14 and said that's just not good enough.
Especially with six of those wins against three teams that were 190 or worse in the RPI.
In the Big Ten.
In the Big Ten.
And again, that's not their fault, but the Utah game is. I mean, that's a game they had a 16-point lead at halftime, and there's really no reason to lose that. Now, of course, I look back, and I'm sure that, that's one of those, that tournament at the Orleans with no television and with, if you can find this on the internet, the still shots, the kid didn't get the shot off at the end of the Utah game. So it's amazing what kind of impact something like that can have, not having those camera angles and things. But they shouldn't have been in that position anyway.
It's sort of like the old adage, if a tree falls in the middle of the forest and no one hears it, did it have any impact? Well, in this case, it did. There were two bad losses.
Yep, I agree. Definitely.
Brad, one of the things I want to ask you is about, postseason, summer workouts leading up to next year now, because, we're going to have everyone back plus a strong freshman class, and the high expectations are going to be there again. Yeah, I saw a poster ask what I thought was a very interesting question. Do these kids get enough out of staying on campus and just working out with each other and playing pickup games, or is there somewhere, aside from the handful of kids that get picked for the USA program or whatever, is there anywhere someone can go within the NCAA rules to kind of play against some better competition over the summer?
Well, I mean, I think with the kids, I mean, like last summer you saw Mike Tisdale go to that tryout with the USA basketball, and I think that was really good for him. It was supposed to be Mike Davis, but of course he had the injury and missed most of his offseason. I think the big thing for them, they can. Some of those guys have gone overseas. I haven't seen a great benefit to that. I don't think it hurts them, but I haven't seen a great benefit for that from them. But I think one thing that they can do is just being on campus and staying healthy. I mean, it seems like somebody's been hurt in the off season, whether it's Davis with the ankle issue or the tonsil issue or whatever it is. And those are guys, sometimes it's been the guys who really need to work on their skills. Brian Randall seemed to be hurt every off season and never got to work on his skill development. And so I think that staying on campus is good and they can get better. But then there are other options too. Maybe going to the maybe Tisdale gets into the, the big man camp, things like that, where he can go work with other big guys and just work on post moves, holding position, things like that, understanding, how to get angles and get spacing in the post. And I think there's a lot of places like that out there, and I think they're going to explore that as well as also the work on camps. I think most of it's just strength and conditioning with some of those guys. They just got to keep getting stronger, and with their base as much as their upper body. I think Mike Tisdale's legs have to get stronger.
Are we still looking for one more recruit out of the senior class, and would it be a guard or a big?
Yeah, I think they are. I don't think they're looking for one out of a senior class. I mean, I think they are a little bit if it could be the right guy, but I think they're looking for a junior college player if it can work out, just because I don't, if it's a point guard, Yeah, I think I'll find a 2000. If Brandon Knight wants to come here, I think I'll take him. But, you know, but I think realistically the kids in 2010 are really not maybe at the level that you want to invest 4 years of scholarship in. That's where maybe they can get a kid who's more of a mid-major point guard. You know, kid, they're looking for a kid maybe good attitude, wants to come in and, you know, just compete and be, you know, understand that he's going to be a backup for, you know, McKamey and do things like that. And then the next year, you know, have Tracy there and you've got someone to kind of mentor him and to kind of work with him. And so he doesn't, isn't expected to play 35 minutes a game as a freshman point guard.
Did you see the Sun Times piece on the 20 point guards who are from Illinois who are currently playing in the NCAA and most often starting on these teams in NCAA to play?
Yeah, it's amazing, isn't it? I mean, I didn't see the article. I heard about it though, but I mean, it's amazing. There's a ton of them that have been really, really successful going out and, you know, around the country. So, I mean, there's some guys out there. I think that's why they're evaluating some of these guys in 2010 and making sure that they, you know, aren't missing out on anyone from that 2010 class.
Where is Bertrand now as far as his health conditions and assuming he's 100% next year, where do you see him fitting into the mix minutes-wise?
Well, I think that's one of the things. I think he can play minutes at the point against certain matchups. I think the concern would be you wouldn't want him to be your primary point guard right now. I think he's got some areas he needs to work on, you know, with sometimes he can be a little loose with his ball handling. He's got really good handles, but sometimes he gets a little loose. I think some of that's just experience and not understanding that hit. Now, one area where he has made great strides is his strength. He is so much stronger. I mean, you just look at the kid and he was kind of skinny and kind of a beanpole when he got here, and he's probably, I would guess, gained 10 to 15 pounds of muscle, and his upper body looks a lot different, a lot more defined, a lot more cut, and he looks really good. He's taken this time, this season off, to really develop his body, and I think that's going to be important for him down the road. I really think he has a lot of upside and potential. Mike Mullins one time, his AAU coach, compared him when he was a junior to Evan Turner, I don't think he's not as big as Evan Turner, but, you know, he could be a kid who can, you know, be a mismatch, you know, have the size to be able to take a smaller guard down in the paint and have the, ball handling take a bigger guy at the dribble. So I think that's where he could, you know, be really, really effective. Hopefully, you know, next year he can be kind of play a fill-in role, a backup role, and then just develop from there.
Maybe he can morph into a Steve Bardo type. I look at the 1989 team, and they didn't have great ball handlers. I mean, between Gil, Bardo, and Anderson, Larry Smith was probably the best ball handler, and he was coming off the bench that year. And you may have that, especially if McKamey decides not to come back next year. You may have a situation where you'll have either Jeremy Richmond or Bertrand playing almost like a point forward position with hopefully Paul and Richardson's ball handling ratcheting up a bit.
Yeah, no question. I think, and that's where Jeremy Richmond makes a huge difference because he has the ability to handle the ball, especially at the small forward position. I don't see, there aren't many guys who can, who are going to take the ball from him, especially small forwards. And so he's going to be a great addition. And I think Bertrand can also fill that role. He's got such a, you know, he's, because of his athleticism. The one difference between Bardo and Bertrand is the athleticism. Joseph is very, very athletic. Now, can he develop the head for the game that Steve Bardo had? I mean, Bardo was an extremely intelligent player and really made himself a really, really good college basketball player. Now, can Bertrand make those strides? And if he does, then he's going to be really good.
Don't tell Bardo, by the way, that he's not athletic. Because,
well, I saw him this week. I wouldn't say he's not athletic. Just a plus athlete, though. So.
Brad, does Simpson have any future in this program?
He's got to get himself together, both on and off the court. He's got to work harder. He's got to work harder in practice. He's got to work harder in the classroom. He's got to decide, dedicate himself to earning playing time, or else, or if he doesn't do that, then I think that the guys coming in behind him, he's going to have a hard time.
Well, it seems like we've been saying that.
Talented.
We've been saying that for 2 years. So he hasn't really made any strides in the 2 years.
A little. I don't think he's made the strides that they were hoping for, from the intensity standpoint. He's still just kind of laid back. Now, there are times if you could watch one scrimmage or one practice, and for a 3 or 4 minute span, you'd think he's, you're wondering, why in the world is this kid not playing? Well, then you'd watch the next 3 or 4 minutes, and you'd say, now I understand why this kid's not playing. So, you know, it's just one of those things where he's got to get more consistent, because you really, it's hard to trust him when you don't know what you're going to get.
And not all 13 kids on a scholarship roster are going to blossom and play. It's unreasonable to think that every kid on the roster is going to contribute somehow. It's just not going to happen.
No, yeah, you can only play five. I don't think there's anybody who plays a rotation of more than 10 guys in the NCAA. So, you know, you're not going to see a kid who contributes. Now, where they can contribute, you know, which is, I think, one thing I'd like to see Sam do, is just the battle in practice. Because not only would it make him better, it would make the other guys better to have to battle against him. You know, and they're... there are moments when he does, and there are moments when he really doesn't. So, that's an area where, you know, he could, even if he's not contributing on the floor, you can contribute, you know, in other ways, hopefully. So.
What have you heard about the DePaul job? Anybody, the front runner for that job?
Well, you know, I don't know. I've heard some names. I've heard like a Brian Gregory at Dayton, might be an interesting name for them. You know, there's a lot of rumors on DePaul message boards talking about Jamie Dixon, but I don't, you know, kind of guess he has some connection there to DePaul, but I don't see him making that switch from Pitt. You know, they're a 3 seed and he'd have to take over a program in the same conference that, you know, has won 1 game in 2 years, I think. So, you know, I don't see him making that move, but that's one of Gregory's obviously a name that I've heard that's popped up. I don't know how serious that is. I guess we'll kind of, you know, after the season, we'll know. You know, so it's going to be an interesting job. It's one of those jobs that you could see, if they get the right person there, could be competitive in a few years, because obviously there's a lot of talent in Illinois. But I think it's going to be hard just with their, you know, with their logistics, with the off-campus arena, things like that, that make it a little more difficult for whoever takes that job.
I agree with you. Even if they had an 8,000-seat arena on campus, they'd be far better served with having a small arena on campus.
Yeah, no question. I agree. I mean, I just think it'd be better, you know, the on-campus arena. You know, right now you've got to bus kids out there for their games, and, you know, it's tough. I mean, kids don't want to do that. I mean, I look at the Assembly Hall, you know, they can have a lot of those games, early Big Ten games, they were sold out, and they were full, except for maybe the student section. Some of those kids walking across campus is too much, so to expect them to get on a bus and, you know, bus for, you know, depending through traffic, you know, at rush hour is not something that's probably likely to happen.
Well, they don't have that many students anyway. It's more, you know, when they were winning
25,000 students, DePaul has.
Well, undergrad?
Yeah, it's a big school, DePaul.
Well,
yeah.
Okay. Well, traditionally, it's as much as the city and suburbs supporting the team. When they were winning in the 80s, they didn't have a problem filling up Ball State Arena, whether it was, students or otherwise. But, you know, Brad, I wanted to ask you, give us an update, please, if you will, on the recruiting for the 2011 class. I'm concerned, Mr. G will disagree with me, but as I look ahead and see, you know, as we would sit here a year from now after tournament time, you know, Cole Davis, Tisdale, McKamey, Jordan, their eligibility will be up. And our front line for the following year would be Myers Leonard as a sophomore, Griffey as a junior, and maybe Jeremy Richmond as a sophomore. And Simpson would be the only big after that. Now, you would have Egwu coming in, but, you know, he's still somewhat a project, I would think. So in the 2011 class, who might represent another solid big, where it looks like as a freshman there might be some time for that person?
I think Mike Shaw, obviously, is a guy that they're extremely interested in. I think he can play the three and play, you know, probably play the four as a face of four.
Is he 6'8"?
Yeah, I think that's about right.
Okay.
You know, he's in that range. I think he's the kid who's the main priority for them. I think they'd love to lock him up just because of, you know, his potential, his upside. And he started to put up numbers now. You know, he started to become a force, you know, on both ends, offensively, defensively, rebounding. He's starting to figure it out. You know, he's one of those kids that was all about, you know, potential for a while. Now he's putting up the production. I think that's where he's, you know, that's where he's made some strides. And
are you really sold on Mike Shaw, though?
You know, I wasn't at one time, but now I am. After the way he's played at the end of this from January on, I think he's been really good down the stretch for De La Salle. And they got knocked out, but I thought he was really good. He has put himself, he's put himself back in the mix there, with, you know, I think he's still behind Blackshear, but I think he's right up there with the rest of those kids in that 2011 class now, because he's playing now. He's playing hard. He's understood that he has to get to the basket and he has to be, you know, be physical, get in the paint, you know, rebound and do all those things.
By the way, how impressed were you with the athleticism of the Hales Franciscan kids? I thought those kids could play.
They're so quick and athletic. I mean, it's really amazing. I mean, when you look at kids, a team like that, that you know, they're playing at the 2A level, and that makes them look even quicker, I think. But they had a great season, you know, against everybody. You know, they beat you know, everybody up there in Chicago virtually, except for a couple teams. And those kids were really impressive. I was impressed with their quickness, athleticism, and also their ability. You know, they ran into a guy who, you know, they get to the basket, but, you know, I think they finished pretty well. But it's hard when you had a kid like Leonard in there trying to finish over him. Was a little bit more difficult than probably what they're used to.
Were any of those kids, do you think, under-recruited?
I really like Patrick Miller, the kid that's going, Middle Tennessee State or wherever he's going?
Tennessee State, I think, yeah.
Tennessee State, yeah. I like him. I think he's a nice player. I think there are a couple other kids, too, on that that team who were a little bit under-recruited probably, which, you know, and they're kids that can play. I mean, they're tough, too. I love that toughness those kids brought. They didn't back down. You know, they went right at Leonard. You know,
they got up some shots on Leonard that I have no idea how they got the shots off, and they were actually making them.
Oh, yeah, they hit some shots that are just amazing, wasn't it? I mean, the guy's putting his hand above the square trying to block them, and they're still getting them off. I mean, that's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
What would you say the odds are that we would get Shaw, and has he indicated when he would be, you know, ready to make a commitment?
You know, he's talked about waiting. He's talked about, you know, deciding. I don't think he's really, you know, let anyone know exactly when he wants to. But I think Illinois is doing very well with him. I think Michigan State, Marquette, Illinois, those Texas are the schools that probably I've heard mentioned a lot by him. But I'm not sure Texas, they've got a bunch of kids, so I would say it's probably more like the other three, Michigan State, Marquette, and Illinois. And I think those three schools are going very hard at him, and I could see him doing something this summer, or this spring rather, and I could also see him wait until the fall. So it just kind of depends on, I think, when he feels right, or when he, you know, feels like he's ready to make his decision, he'll let everybody know, but he's not going to tip his hand ahead of time.
And what about Chason, our ever-present bridesmaid?
I think I think Illinois is his leader. I mean, I don't think you'll get him to say that, but I think they are, just from comments that he's made and things. But I also think that he's not ready to make a decision yet. So it's one of those things. And I think he realizes that Illinois is not going to, you know, I don't think they're going to wait on him. Now, that doesn't mean they won't, you know, they won't have a spot for him necessarily, but I think they're recruiting other kids too. And if one of those kids pop, they may, you know, or once they commit, they may have to call him and say, hey, you know, here's your chance. And I don't know what he'd say. You know, I guess it, you know, it's putting a little pressure. And I think if they got another commitment, it could put some pressure on him knowing that there's some limited spots at that time.
Is there another guard that you think we're in on that you like as much as Chason?
Well, you know, realistically, I think that the Henry kid from Chicago War is a kid that he's a small forward. I think that they like a lot. They really like his upside, really shoot the basketball, you know, and, you know, he's got that toughness and hard-nosed attitude, you know. I think they like him a lot as maybe a small forward type. As far as a guard, I think that it'll be Chason in 2011, but I could also see them going and taking a 2012 kid with that scholarship too, because there's a ton of guards, you know, the Gary Harris kid from Indiana, Ron Patterson from over in Indiana. You know, there's so many kids that are, you know, in that mix that are in that 2012 class that are really good guards. And there's a bunch of point guards from Illinois, too. There's also a Marcus Page kid from Iowa who's a point guard in 2012. So I think they're looking at, you know, they're going to cast a wide net and they're going to, you know, see which one they can get. But I think with Chason, they don't have to, with the 11 and 12, and they have so many guards now, that they're not desperate as they have been in the past. So I think they can, you know, kind of wait and see. And if something happens with one of the other kids, then they can take him. But, you know, I don't see them. They're still recruiting kids, but I don't see them just totally waiting on Chason, but they're also not going to go away from him either.
Give us your final four, Brad.
You know, I'm looking at Kansas, I think, has definitely got to be in there, although I think they have a really tough draw. You know, just because, you know, Michigan State is a team that, that beat them last year, if you remember, knocked them out. And that's who they could play in the Sweet 16. Of course, Michigan State could – who knows which Michigan State team shows up. So I think Kansas will end up there. I like Kentucky to make it just because they have the most athleticism and most talent. I think this sounds crazy, but I think this could be the year when we actually see three of the...
Brad, get out of the way of that train. We don't want to lose you here.
I know. Killing me here. But I think you can see... I like Duke's draw, too. But I think they're a team that's probably... they just seem to have the right matchups for them to get through to the Final Four. So, now, who am I? And I got Syracuse in the other bracket. Who's the two seed with Syracuse?
The two seed with Syracuse. Boz is not acknowledging that there is an NCAA tournament, so he won't help you.
No, I haven't looked at the brackets at all. I'm worried about our team. I'd like to see Myers-Leonard and his weight trainer go down to Champaign and start working, with Griffey and Brandon and DJ, because that's the one thing that excites me the most is for a kid his age, just. His body and how strong he is now, and obviously he could only get stronger. And if I picture Griffey with Myers' shoulders and arms in a year or so, he'd be unstoppable.
By the way, Kansas State is the two in Syracuse's bracket. I think that's by far and away the weakest bracket.
Duke was catered to again.
You've got I'm talking about Syracuse's bracket. You've got Syracuse, Vanderbilt's the four, Pitt is the three. Kansas State is the two, and Butler is the five.
I agree with that. I think I could see Syracuse, but coming out of there, the one team that's kind of a sleeper for me. Maybe it's not a sleeper for other people. I really like the way West Virginia finished the season.
Yeah. I actually had them winning the championship in one of my brackets.
Yeah, I mean, I could see them making a run too. I don't think there's going to be parity this year. I think you're going to see those top. Seven or eight teams be the teams in the Final Four. I don't think you're going to see teams coming from nowhere to make the Final Four.
In the West bracket, you may see a sleeper get to the Final Four. You could see a team like Gonzaga or a team like Xavier or a team like even Florida at a 10 make a surprise run in a bracket that's weak.
Yeah, I don't know about Florida, but I could see Gonzaga just because, especially if Syracuse is without the big guy in that early matchup, because Gonzaga has a ton of front court guys who are big and athletic, so they might be a difficult matchup.
And they can shoot the ball over a zone, too.
Yes, they can. They've got some guys that can shoot the ball. I think that might be the region where you could see that, but I could also, this could be here you see all four number ones make it, too. That wouldn't shock me at all. I just don't see the, once you get past that top tier, it's just not quite as good.
I think Nova's probably the weakest number two. And of course,
I was looking at that today. I was surprised they got a two with the way they finished.
Yeah.
You look at some of their losses, but then I was looking at the threes and I couldn't really find one that was, was better than them. So,
I mean, I look at how this is set up for Duke. They get Cal, Louisville. Louisville could be a handful for Duke.
Yeah.
But then in the round of 16, they're either going to get somebody like Texas A&M, Utah State, Purdue, or Siena. That's going to be a weak game.
Yeah, I Purdue, I mean, if you watched any of the Big Ten tournament, my goodness, I mean, that could have been their performance against Minnesota. I mean, almost set back basketball for a while. So it was amazing, I mean, how bad it was. 11 points at halftime, it was reminiscent of Illinois Penn State last year, except they didn't hold the other team in the 30s, too. So it was bad, and I don't know with Hummel if they can, they got enough guys that can make plays without Hummel. You can take away those two guys, and that makes it really hard on them to score.
By the way, they're filming, if Temple and Wisconsin both get to the second round, they're filming that game in black and white.
No shot clock,
black and white.
The one game I want to see, when I saw it come on the screen, my heart started beating rapidly, was Clemson, Missouri.
Right.
That's going to be a track meet.
Yeah, that could be fun.
Yeah.
That could be an interesting game. And, that would be one of those games where no lead is safe, because both those teams will give up a lead in a hurry. Clemson's been known to do that. So
yeah, get the oxygen and defibrillators out for that one.
Where's that game at? Is it at elevation or is it high up? I mean, is it at sea level? At elevation, you could have guys passing out on the court.
I think that could be entertaining.
Yeah.
That could, whichever team survives, maybe. So there you go.
Let me ask you a question, Brad. You know, obviously, we're all clearly disappointed having gone through this three-year stretch where we've been out of the tournament for two out of those 3 years.
Barely made it in.
And are you optimistic? Are you just disgusted? Give me the state of the program for Brad Sturdy.
Well, I'm optimistic just because the talent level is going to be up there. I think sometimes this year we were a little bit, you know, when you looked back and you looked at these years and you thought you were going to have this kid or you thought you were going to have this kid, but they were always one player away. I thought the last three teams were one guy away. You know, whether it was Eric Gordon, you know, 2 years ago, whether last year it was Jamar Smith, you know, this year, you know, if Jamar Smith, you know, I think they're one guy away. And next year, I don't think they're one guy away. I think they have the talent to get there. And, you know, they only have three top 100 recruits on the roster this year. I'm not counting Alex Legion because I don't know how he got ranked that high. But anyway, next year you bring in three kids, you know, Richmond and Leonard are ranked higher than any kids that they've brought in. And Leonard may be undervalued, to be honest.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, I think we need more mental toughness and physical toughness. And I don't think that Jamar Smith necessarily would have been that missing piece in terms of that physical toughness that we were lacking this year.
I think that you can say that, but I think they needed a guy who can score, and he can put the ball in the basket. I mean, at a rate that nobody on the team right now can. You know, and I think that would be a thing that would have got them. They would have been in the NCAA tournament with a player like that because they relied so much on, and nothing against him, but they were relying on Billy Cole as a three-man, largely because Brandon had a tough transition. And so when you're relying on him as your three-man, you know, that makes it a little tough. And when you could have had a guy like Jamar Smith, who's, you know, going to be at the Fort Smith, draft workouts, and he's going to be a he's a Division II All-American Conference Player of the Year down there. So I think that's where he would have helped. He's just another guy, another veteran guy who could have been added to the mix.
Well, Brad, thanks for joining us. We really appreciate your help, and we look forward to great things from the Illini in the future and having you cover them as well.
Well, thanks. I hope that they can put it together. I hope they have a good run in the NIT, and I hope they next year that they can live up the expectations. I think that they have the talent to make a run in the Sweet 16 next year, and hopefully they can get it done.
Thanks, Brad.
Okay, Brad.
We'll see you on the other side.
All right, thanks, guys.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and then we'll be back with perhaps a surprise guest.
You buy the car you want at RizzoCars.com.
It's true. You will find the car you want at RizzaCars.com. Over 6,000 new and used cars, trucks, and vans available online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's so fast and so easy. RizzaCars.com is your one-stop auto purchase resource site. Build a new vehicle. Compare up to 5 vehicles at once. Access new vehicle reviews. Take a new car video test drive. RizzaCars.com also offers easy-to-qualify online financing, which helps to make your purchase simple and fast. Shop 13 new car franchises, including Ford, Chevy, Cadillac, Buick, Lincoln, Mercury, Acura, Porsche, Kia, Hummer, and Saab. So if you're tired and frustrated of driving from dealer to dealer, just remember,
you buy the car you want at RizzoCars.com. RizzoCars.com.
You make plans for just about everything. For the weekend, for the vacation, for your daughter's wedding. But have you created a financial plan for the rest of your life? Now may be the perfect time to do it. AXA, Financial Protection. For more information, call Stephen King, Financial Consultant, 224-554-8053. That's 224-554-8053. Securities and investment advisory services offered through AXA Advisors, LLC, 212-314-4600. Member FINRA, SIPC. Step back in time when going out for dinner meant something really special. Step into Wildfire, a steak and chop house with the aura of a 1940s dinner club. Private and semi-private rooms offer a variety of options for any social or business event. Order from our supper club menu served family style. Try our horseradish crusted filet mignon or Wildfire's delicious cedar plank salmon. Dine at any of our 8 Wildfire restaurant locations. Visit us on the web at wildfirerestaurant.com to find the location nearest you.
All the talk, all the time. This is TalkZone.com. Internet Talk Radio. And now, let's get back in the game for more Talking Illini on TalkZone.com. Here are your hosts, Boz and Mr. G.
Do you know the way to San Jose? I'm going there. Hey, Herb from San Jose.
Absolutely. Perfect timing. I just walked in the room. How are you guys doing?
And where is the Sun Times putting you up these days?
I'm sorry, you're breaking up a little bit.
What hotel is the Sun Times putting you up in?
We're staying at the Marriott.
Oh, nice.
Fort Trotter's Heaven.
And is there a nice hotel bar in the Marriott?
You know, I imagine there is, but honestly, I haven't checked it out yet. I did see a flyer that mentioned a happy hour, so I would buy you a drink if you want to come on out.
Well, thanks, but there is no happy hour in Champaign this week, is there?
No, it's unfortunate, you know. It's just, I remember people were castigating me when I wrote that they were jeopardizing their NCAA tournament with those losses in Las Vegas. Because it makes it sound like, you know, the season is all about this tournament. But as it turned out, and as we talked, you know, those things really did hurt.
Yeah, they came back to bite us, those losses. And I really do believe that had we not lost to Utah or Bradley, we'd be in the tournament right now.
No, that's right. That's right, because if you win the first game, you play Oklahoma State, and then that's got a better, you know, that's a better RPI. Even if you don't win it, it doesn't impact your RPI the same way as a loss to a Bradley.
Do you think we would have been in instead of Minnesota, or both of us would have made it and the Big Ten would have had 6 teams?
Well, you know, it's hard to say, Boz. I don't see how you can put Minnesota in and not put Illinois in ahead of Minnesota. If Minnesota won the head-to-head and Minnesota goes deeper in the Big Ten tournament, I mean, if that's the only change, I don't think that you would be taking Minnesota's place.
Yeah, it would probably be Utah State or UTEP.
Yeah, that could be. I mean, there's just so many variables that enter into it. And you know, a lot of people are howling about Georgia Tech. Is that, or was it Wake? I forget
no,
which
it,
one.
No, it was Wake. Wake lost head-to-head, had a worse record in the ACC than Vatek, but had a couple more quality wins out of the ACC.
Right. You know, I mean, it's just sort of, it's hard to figure because they judge different teams by different standards. But, you know, if and I think from Bruce on down, they know that, you know, one more win in the right place or even one more win just about anywhere, you know, would have made a big difference.
Although, you know, Wake Forest, they beat Richmond, they beat Xavier, and those are good wins out of conference.
Well, they are, and, you know, I'm of the school.
And by the way, they beat Gonzaga, too. So they had Gonzaga, Xavier, and Richmond out of conference.
So they had good wins. You know, I you know, with a field, even with a field of 65, I know that Bruce and a lot of the coaches want to expand the field, but if you're not making a field of 65, then, you know, that's just too bad. I mean, I don't get all exercised like some people about the fairness of the last few in or the first four out. I mean, I remember, and I bet you guys do too, I remember when the field was far smaller. And of course, you know, times have changed.
16. Back in
I remember
the 60s.
When Dean Memminger and Marquette turned down an NCAA bid because they weren't the overall number one, and they ended up going to the NIT instead of taking the NCAA bid.
Yeah, that was probably the last time that happened. And, God, that was a great NIT, by the way. I was just reading a bio of Pete Maravich was in that NIT with LSU, and Bobby Knight had a good run with Army. And, God, I forget what all, and of course that Marquette team was really good with Manninger and Jim Jones and all those guys.
Was Bob Lackey on that team?
No, he was, I think, a little later.
Well, Lackey graduated high school in 68.
Right.
No, I think Lackey was on that team.
Oh, okay.
I think so.
The Black Swan.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to get back to the NCAA and the Big Ten teams, and, you know, tell us your feelings about, you know, how deep you think Ohio State can go. Mr. G and I have been discussing the depth situation, the really not so strong middle with Lauderdale and Mattson, and they're just kind of a 4+1 team. But how far can those four guys take them?
Well, you know, it depends on where they, you know, with, you know, the kind of, they got to stay out of foul trouble. And they've got to, you know, they've got to make their shots. You know, they got to do the things that you do when you don't have depth. I'm just looking at my bracket. They kind of got a tough draw. You know, that was one thing that I think is a little curious. You know, I mean, they got, you know, they got to, it's just, it's sort of a tough draw. Being, I mean, that, for them to be in Kansas's bracket makes no sense to me.
Right. That means that they were the fourth number two, which.
Well, yeah, Guerrero said that they didn't necessarily follow that formula because of certain things in terms of geography,
right,
and conferences. So that wasn't followed strictly.
Well, that's right. And, you know, the first glance is, well, they kept him in the Midwest in Milwaukee. You know, I mean, they try and balance it out. And the other thing that they won't probably really talk about is that they've got to dance everybody around the Big East because there were so many teams. You know, Ohio State, I think I got them going. I think I got them losing to Georgetown in the Sweet 16. Does that sound right?
Yeah, they can get punished by a big physical team. I think that that's where they're vulnerable.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I like a lot of the Big Ten teams to, you know, I mean, I picked up Racket in the paper this morning, and I think I had Michigan State and Wisconsin going to the Sweet 16. And, you know, when you look at it, Wisconsin might be the team that has the best chance to go the deepest. You know, some experts, I don't know that I'm one of them, think that Wisconsin is a good matchup. Not a good matchup, but it's a matchup they can play against Kentucky because of the way they guard. And, you know, but then you see Wisconsin. I mean, if they rattle the rim the way they did against Illinois, well, just about anybody in the tournament is going to be out with that.
I was making the comment that I thought that the Wisconsin Temple game, if they play in the second round, should be shot in black and white.
Yeah, it should be, but I like to go out on a limb here and there. So I've got Cornell taking Temple out for the Badgers in the first game.
Yeah, Cornell is up tempo by comparison to either of those schools.
Yeah, exactly. I mean that could be, if it's Wisconsin and Temple. Well, I would still like Wisconsin in that matchup. I think that when, you know, that was kind of, they got that out of their system against Illinois. You know, it's sort of hard because you want to think that momentum from the conference tournament is a good thing, but there's often been times when it hasn't been, just not only the Big Ten, but around the country. So I try not to read too much into that, especially if somebody lays an egg the way.
You know, you look at the eye test, Herb, and much has been made about, well, did this team pass the eye test? You know, if you looked at the Big Ten tournament and looked at how Illinois played against Wisconsin and Ohio State, they clearly looked like one of the top 65 teams in America.
Yeah, they did. You know, I'm not familiar. You know, I don't totally understand the eye test. I mean, they have all these stats and all this. I sort of think that the whole bracket selection process, it's like the tax code, you know, if you can interpret it any way you want. And but you're right, Illinois does look like a tournament team, and there's no question that the good wins, you know, really demonstrated that. And if they had just finished a little bit, you know, that Gonzaga game puts them over the top and also makes them look like a, you know, better in terms of the eye test. And you know, the Ohio State game, obviously, in Indianapolis the other day, Yeah, you know, but it just you just don't know with Illinois, and that was kind of the whole deal with them all year, as anybody who watched them.
Getting back to the national scene, can anybody stop Kansas? Because to me, they're head and shoulders above everybody else in the tournament.
They sure do look like it. You know, they really do look like it. And I'm trying to think when, you know, there have been, I'll tell you what, there was a Kansas, I was at the game. I covered the game when this Kansas had a team. I think it might have been 98, give or take a couple, a year or two. Arizona beat them. In the, I think in the Sweet 16.
And then was it 97? 97, when Arizona,
97.
When Arizona beat four number ones.
That's right. And, you know, that Kansas team, that Kansas team was pretty highly regarded, too, as I recall.
Was that the Jacques Vaughn, Paul Pierce team?
Yes, yes. And I think it was in Birmingham, Alabama, if I'm not mistaken.
Right.
But that said, you still have to like Kansas, especially with, you know, with Sherron Collins, you know, being the key guy. You always love a veteran guard. And they just really handled a lot of people this year.
Boz, you wanted to...
Herb, who decides where you go and why are you in San Jose and not at another site?
You know, we talked about it. My editors sort of felt like, you know, we sort of adopt teams when we don't have one. And we have a guy with Notre Dame.
Okay.
And I went with Notre Dame a couple of years ago when Illinois didn't make. This year, you know, there's a big Marquette sentiment in the office. And I can see that, you know, I kind of offered up. You know, I thought Milwaukee was interesting. You know, you got Ohio State and Minnesota up there. And,
yeah, there's some good teams up there. Pitt,
And Pitt's up there.
Oklahoma
you know, I
State.
Suggested that. But they like the Marquette thing. Plus, we got Butler as an undercard here.
Okay.
And, you know, Steve Alford and the Lobos.
Herb, we appreciate you jumping on with us. Unfortunately, we're coming to the close of hour number two, and Dave behind the glass is waving to me and saying, say goodbye, Mr. G.
All right. Well, I'm sorry we didn't have time to do our NIT picks.
That's all right, Herb. Happy hunting. Have fun out there, and we'll see you soon.
Sounds good, guys.
Boz, we're going to do a quick wrap-up here. It's been a lot of fun. I wish we had real tournament fever instead of NIT tournament fever. ILL, Boz.
I and I, Mr. G.